HiBridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Native Tongue by Suzette Hayden Elgin. Read by Amy Landon. Preface. There is a sense in which no book can be said to be ordinary today. We are well aware of that. When the publications of as many as 10 books in a single year is unusual, even the most undistinguished volume would not be ordinary. But when we say that this is no ordinary book, we mean a good deal more than just that its format is rare. First, we believe this book to be the only work of fiction ever written by a member of the Lines. The men of the linguist families have given the world a vast body of scholarly work and other nonfiction. Their women have made substantial contributions to that work, duly acknowledged by the authors in their introductory notes and prefaces. But Native Tongue is not a work of scholarship, or a teaching grammar, or a book of science for the general public. It is a novel, and it gives us a sense of participation in the linguists' lives during the first quarter of the 23rd century that we cannot gain from any history of the time, no matter how detailed, no matter how abundantly documented. Very little fiction on that subject exists, even from the pens of non-linguists. This book is the unique example from a linguist, and as such it is beyond price. We owe a major debt to the scholar who found the manuscript and who saw to it that it reached our hands. We deeply regret that our ignorance of that scholar's identity prevents us from expressing our appreciation more effectively. It is a miracle that this document was not lost. We are grateful for the miracle. Second, although we would have had no difficulty making the material available in the traditional publishing media of computer disk or microfiche, that was not what we wanted. From the very first reading, we felt strongly that this should be a printed book, printed and bound in the ancient manner. It is very special. It seemed to us that it deserved an equally special form. It took almost 10 years, and the efforts of hundreds of persons, to secure the necessary monies and to find craftsmen with the necessary skills, who were willing to provide them for what we could afford to pay, even for this limited edition. We cannot tell you who actually wrote Native Tongue. It was signed simply The Women of Chornyak Baronhaus. It must have been written in scraps of time, at odd stolen moments, at the cost of sacrificing much-needed sleep, for the women of the Lines had no leisure. If anyone has evidence that might shed light on the mystery of its authorship, no matter how fragmentary, we ask that you share it with us. We promise you that it will be treated with the utmost discretion and respect. It is with great pride, then, and with a sense of profound accomplishment, that we urge you to read on, and to keep this volume among your treasures and in a place of honor. Patricia Ann Wilkins, Executive Editor. Native Tongue is a joint publication of the following organizations: the Historical Society of Earth, Woman Talk, Earth Section; the Meta Guild of Lay Linguists, Earth Section; the Laden Group. Chapter 1. Article 24. Section 1. The 19th Article of Amendment to the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. Section 2. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of its submission. Declared in force March 11, 1991. Article 25. Section 1. No female citizen of the United States shall be allowed to serve in any elected or appointed office, to participate in any capacity, official or unofficial, in the scholarly or scientific professions, to hold employment outside the home, without the written permission of her husband, or, should she be unmarried, a responsible male, related by blood or appointed her guardian by law, or to exercise control over money or other property or assets, without such written permission. Section 2. The natural limitations of women being a clear and present danger to the national welfare, when not constrained by the careful and constant supervision of a responsible male citizen. All citizens of the United States of the female gender shall be deemed legally minors, regardless of their chronological age, except that they shall be tried as adults in courts of law if they are 18 years of age or older. Section 3. Inasmuch as the aforementioned natural limitations of women are inherent, such that no blame accrues to them thereby, nothing in this article shall be construed to allow the mistreatment or abuse of women. Section 4. The Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Section 5. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of its submission. Declared in force March 11, 1991. Summer, 2205. There were only 8 of them at the meeting. Not the best of numbers. Not only was 8 a very small number to accomplish business efficiently, it was an even number, which meant that in case of a tie, they'd have to give Thomas Blair Chorniak an extra vote. And he always hated that. It smacked of an elitism that was completely contrary to the philosophy of the lines. Paul John Chorniak was there, still putting in his oar at 94, when Thomas ought to have been able to proceed without the old man's interference. Aaron was there. He had to be, given the final item on their agenda, which concerned him directly. They'd managed to scare up 2 of the senior men by comsed, so that the faces of James Nathan Chorniak and of Thomas's brother-in-law Giles were there with them in blurry irritation, after a fashion. Adam was there, only 2 years younger than Thomas, and quite properly part of the group. Thomas relied on his brother for many things, not the least of them being his skill at deflecting their father's digressions, and convincing Paul John that his words had been attended to. Kenneth was there, because, not being a linguist, he could always get away from whatever he was doing to come to meetings. Jason was there because the negotiation he was involved in was hopelessly stalled on a technicality, about which he could do nothing, leaving him marking time until the State Department could straighten it out. Either of the last 2 could have solved the problem of the even number by courteously excusing himself. But neither one would do it. It was Jason's opinion that since Kenneth was only a son-in-law, and not even a member of the lines by birth, it was his place to take himself off to whatever it was he ought to be doing instead of butting in here. And it was Kenneth's opinion that he had as much right in the meeting as Jason had. He hadn't given up his birth name and taken Mary Sarah Chorniak's name for his own for nothing. He was Chorniak now, as much as any of them, and he knew very well that one of the things he had to do was underline that fact firmly, at every opportunity, or the other junior men would bury him at the bottom of the pecking order. He wasn't about to leave. It was awkward, and Thomas briefly considered asking James Nathan to drop out, but they'd woken him up for this, and he hadn't been happy about it. He'd been up all the previous night and well past breakfast time, interpreting in one of the third colony crises, of which there seemed to be an inexhaustible supply, and he'd been obviously exhausted. Now they had him awake, it would be less than tactful to suggest that he go back to bed. Sorry to bother you, but we thought we needed you at the time. No, it wouldn't do. And he let it pass. If he had to vote double, so be it. They'd all survive. And their meetings were always small at Chorniak household lately, except for the semi-annuals that were on permanent schedule, and for which everyone kept a free day on his calendar. The way the government was pushing into space these days, and every inch of the push to be negotiated with the whole apparatus of treaties and purchase agreements and establishment of formal relations, it was hard to find any linguist under the age of 60 with an hour to spare for household affairs. He would settle for what he had, Thomas decided, and be grateful it wasn't just himself and old Paul John and Aaron. They would have made a pitiful quorum. Just the 3 of them at the table all by themselves. The table's shape, the standard blunt-tipped A without a crossbar, was ideal for the semi-annuals. You could really pack the men in around it, and still have ample space for 3Ds and holograms in the solid area at the top of the A. But when you had only half a dozen, you either rattled around with each of you established at some arbitrary point to fill out the geometry, or you huddled in a little knot at one end and felt dwarfed. Today they had opted for the rattling around. His father at his right hand, the comm sets clear across the room out of the way of people's heads, and the other four men laid out like the points of a compass. Silly-ass procedure. He got them through the first 7 agenda items with dispatch, and no need for any tie-breaking. The one thing he'd been a little uncertain about, the contract for REM-80-4801, ran into no opposition at all. Sometimes there were advantages to a meeting with a substantial percentage of inexperienced junior participants. He'd had his arguments ready, just in case. But either none of the others saw the dangerous opening in subparagraph 11, or none of them cared enough about it to spend time arguing over it. The other items were routine. They went through the whole list in just over 12 minutes flat. And now there was this last matter to be taken up. Cautiously. Thomas read it out for them, keeping his voice casual and adding no elaborations, and then he waited. As he'd expected, Aaron made a point of looking bored past all bearing. He had the Adonis Lines skill with facial expression, plus the ease of long practice, and he managed to look excruciatingly uninterested.
"This matter is open for discussion," Thomas said. "Comments?"
"Frankly, I don't see any need for discussion," observed Aaron at once. "We could have settled this whole thing by memo, to my way of thinking. And God knows I've better things to do with my time, as do we all, Thomas. I'm sure I'm not the only one strangling in federal deadlines."
Thomas wasn't ready to say anything yet. He raised his eyebrows just the precise fraction indicated, rubbed his chin gently with one hand, and waited some more. And Aaron spoke again.
"I'm willing to accept the fact that you had to add this to a formal agenda. You've convinced me of that," he said. "And we've done it. It's on there, a matter of record, for all the curious world to see and applaud, and that's quite enough time wasted. I move we vote and be done with it."
"With no discussion at all?"
Thomas asked mildly. Aaron shrugged.
"What's to discuss?"
That brought Paul John into it. He was old enough to find the arrogance of this particular son-in-law less than amusing, and too old to be impressed by either his brilliance with language or his astonishing good looks.
"You might find out if you'd let somebody else talk," said the old man. "Why don't you try it and see?"
Thomas moved quickly, not interested in seeing Aaron and Paul John starting on one of the sparring sessions they both took such delight in. That would be a waste of time.
"Aaron," he said, "this meeting is not entirely window dressing."
"No, we had to discuss those contracts and vote on them."
"Nor is this last item window dressing," Thomas insisted. "There is a reason, a very good reason, that has nothing to do with just putting it on record. For us to give it our consideration, because we do feel, and I might add, we are obligated to feel, more than just a ceremonial regard for the woman in question. And I would remind you that in purely economic terms, the woman is fully entitled to that regard."
Kenneth put in from the far end of the table, right leg of the A. He was nervous, and he hadn't the skill to hide it in either voice or body parlor, but he was determined.
"Nazareth Chorniak has borne 9 healthy infants to this line," he said. "That's 9 alien languages added to the assets of this household. It's not as if she were an untried girl."
Thomas saw Aaron allow the barest sign of contempt, the most carefully measured flicker of disdain, to move over his face. Then it was replaced with a false and cloying kindness that would also be attached to whatever he was about to say. It wasn't a fair contest in any way. Poor Kenneth, straight from the public and brought into Chorniak household with the public's bottomless ignorance of all linguistic skills. And Aaron William Adonis, son of Adonis household, second only to the Chorniak line in the linguist dynasties. Kenneth was a duck in a barrel,
and Aaron enjoyed duck shooting too much to let it pass.
At times, Kenneth, he said sympathetically, it is overpoweringly obvious that you were not born a linguist. You don't learn, do you?
Kenneth flushed, and Thomas felt sorry for him, but he didn't interfere. In some ways, Aaron was right. Kenneth didn't learn. For example, he hadn't yet learned that time spent playing Aaron's little games was time spent feeding Aaron's giant ego, and therefore time wasted. Kenneth fell for it every time.
It isn't the woman, Aaron said pleasantly, who adds the alien languages to the household assets. It is the man. The man goes to the trouble of impregnating the woman, who is then coddled and waited upon and indulged sickeningly, to ensure the welfare of his child. To attribute any credit to the woman who plays the role of a receptacle is primitive romanticism, Kenneth, and entirely unscientific. Reread your biology texts. To attribute any credit to the woman who plays the role of a receptacle is primitive romanticism, Kenneth, and entirely unscientific. Reread your biology texts.
Reread. Presupposed Kenneth had read them already and learned nothing from the experience. Neat and typical of Aaron Adonis. Kenneth sputtered and flushed darker.
Damn it, Aaron!
Aaron went sailing on in the conversational stream. Kenneth was scarcely there at all, except as the recipient of his compassionate instruction.
And you would do well to remember that if it weren't for the intervention of men, only females could ever be born. The human race would degenerate into a species composed entirely of genetically inferior organisms. You might want to think that over, Kenneth. It might be well to keep those very basic facts in mind, as an antidote to sentimental tendencies.
And then he leaned back and blew a superb row of smoke rings toward the ceiling. And he smiled and said,
Let us not confuse the pot with the putter, dear brother.
At the other leg of the table, Jason chuckled in appreciation of the tired joke. Thomas was disappointed. Later he might have a few words to say to his son about cheering on the one who held the gun when the target was a duck sitting in a barrel. He was a good deal more satisfied with what happened next, when the reproof came from the comset screen, where James Nathan's face was wavering and flickering against the fluctuations of the household power mains.
"Damn all Adonis," said this other, more capable son. The only reason we aren't through with this and able to get to those deadlines you were so worried about 5 minutes ago, and the only reason I am not back in my bed, where I certainly ought to be, is because of your love affair with your mouth. None of us, and that includes Kenneth, who has my apology for your bad manners, needs an idiot recitation of information known to every normal human being by the age of 3. Now, I'm going to take it for granted that you're through, Aaron. And I suggest you be through.
Aaron nodded, all courtesy and aplomb, smiling easily, and Thomas knew he considered the rebuke well worth the pleasure he'd had toying with Kenneth, nay Williams. Aaron had never considered Kenneth's input of fresh jeans sufficient justification for his presence. He'd opposed taking the fellow into the house as husband for Mary Sarah in the first place, and he'd made no secret of the fact that his opinion was unchanged, even after 7 years. Kenneth, he was fond of remarking, was positively girlish. Not in Kenneth's hearing, of course, but always where the insult would be sure to get back to his brother-in-law rather promptly.
Nazareth is barren now, said Jason,
aware that he'd been the only one to laugh at Aaron's quip, and anxious to demonstrate there was more to him than that.
She's nearly 40 years old. And she was no beauty even when she was young. What earthly need has she got for breasts? It's absurd. It's a non-issue. It wasn't worth 5 minutes, much less a meeting. I agree with Aaron. I move we end this discussion, vote, and adjourn.
And do what? Let her die?
Paul John cleared his throat, and the senior men looked politely at the ceiling. They were going to have to spend more time with Kenneth. That was obvious. Perhaps a few words to Mary Sarah.
Christ, Kenneth, that's a stupid thing to say.
That was Jason, feeling his oats.
There's plenty of money in the women's individual medical accounts to cover all the treatment Nazareth needs. Who said anything about letting her die?
We don't let women die, you moron. Do you believe everything you read in the news about linguists still?
Thomas sighed then, loud enough to be heard, and caught a sharp glance from Aaron. Aaron would be thinking that he was tired this morning. Tired, and to the well-trained eye, on a thin edge of strain. Aaron would be thinking it was high time Thomas stepped down and passed the running of this household on to someone younger and more able, preferably Thomas Blair second, because Aaron knew he'd be able to push him around. Thomas smiled at Aaron, acknowledging the thought, and let his eyes speak for him.
It'll be many a long year yet before I turn Chorniak household over to anybody, you conceited bastard.
And then he raised one hand to end the argument between Kenneth and Jason.
See here,
Kenneth began, before Thomas cut him off.
Linguists do not say, see here, Kenneth, nor do they say, look here, or listen here, or get this. Please try for a less biased manner of expression.
Thomas was a patient man, and he intended to keep trying with this stubborn and impetuous youngster. He'd seen far rougher diamonds in his time, and the four children Kenneth had sired for them so far were superb specimens. Kenneth obviously didn't understand what difference his choice of sensory predicates made here in the bowels of the great house, miles from any member of the public who might risk contamination from his flaws of phrasing. But he had learned manners enough to keep his opinions to himself. He couldn't keep it off his face, of course, but he didn't know that, and they had no reason to tell him. He nodded his apology and started over.
Perceive this, he said carefully. There is also plenty of money in the women's IMAs to pay for the breast regeneration. I keep the accounts, remember? I'm in a position to know what there is and what there isn't money for. It's a piddling sum of money. Only a cell or two to be implanted, and some rudimentary stimulation to initiate the regeneration of the glands. That is elementary biology, and elementary accounting. It's about the price of a wrist computer, as a matter of fact, and we've bought 40 of those this year. How do we explain that we're unwilling to authorize that small a sum for the benefit of someone who's been so efficient and so sturdy and so productive a receptacle? I'm well aware I wasn't born a linguist, even without Aaron's constant reminders. But I am a member of this household now. I am entitled to be heard. I am not ignorant. And I'll tell you that I am uncomfortable with this decision.
Kenneth, said Thomas, and the kindness in his voice was genuine.
We value the compassion and the quality of empathy that you bring to us. I want you to know that. We sorely need such input. We spend so much of our time sharing the worldviews of beings who are not human that we are far too likely to become a little other than human ourselves. We need someone like you to remind us of that, from time to time. Then why? Because whatever we can afford in the way of actual monies, actual total numbers of credits expended, we cannot afford to spend them on sentimental gestures. And I'm sorry if it distresses you, Kenneth, but that's all it would be. We all regret that, but it remains true. The rule which says, no linguist spends 1 cent that the public might view as conspicuous consumption, holds here, as it holds for every household of the lines, with absolute rigor. But you know very well, Kenneth, because you come from the public, and unlike Aaron, I don't consider that a deficit. You know that no member of the public would indulge a middle-aged and barren woman in the manner that you are proposing. Do you want us to be the household responsible for another round of anti-linguist riots, son? For the sake of one foolish woman, already overindulged her whole life long, and now making the usual feminine mountain out of a pair of thoroughly worn-out molehills? Surely you don't want that, Kenneth, however sympathetic you may be toward Nazareth's demands.
One moment,
said Aaron flatly. I'll clarify that. Nazareth has not demanded anything. She has merely asked.
Quite right, Thomas replied. I overstated the case.
But the point remains, Thomas. The point remains. I'm sure Kenneth has now come to see this matter in a less maudlin light.
Kenneth stared down at the table and said nothing more, and they all relaxed. They could have just overruled him, of course, without the chit-chat. That option was always open to them. But it was preferable to avoid that sort of thing whenever it could be avoided. Linguists lived too much and too deeply in one another's pockets for family feuds not to be a substantial hindrance to the normal conduct of affairs. And with 91 under this roof, Chornyak household was one of the most crowded of them all. You tried for peace in those circumstances, and Aaron's readiness to sacrifice that peace just to score a point or two was a major reason why Thomas would see to it that he never had an opportunity to achieve any real power in this house. It was Aaron who truly did not learn, and apparently could not, and without Kenneth's excuses.
Well, then, said Paul John, rubbing his hands together. We're agreed, are we? We'll authorize the transfer of funds for the treatments to destroy the diseased uterus and breasts of the lady, and order that done at once, and that is all we will do. Correct, gentlemen?
Thomas glanced around the table, and at the Consett screens, and waited a few polite seconds to be sure nobody wanted his attention, and nodded when it became clear that they didn't.
Anything else? He asked. Anyone not clear on the new contract in from the Department of Analysis and Translation on those mirror image dialects? Anyone want to protest the terms they're offering? Remembering, please, that it's a computer job from start to finish. Not much effort there. Any personal business? Any objection to recording the vote on Nazareth's medical care as unanimous? No?
Good, he said, and brought the side of his hand down on the table in the chop gesture of adjournment.
Then we're through. Aaron, you'll see to it that your wife is advised promptly of our decision, and that she goes immediately to the hospital. I want no media accusations later that we delayed and endangered her life, no matter how trivial that may seem. It's no more to our advantage to be accused of callous mistreatment of a woman than of lavish spending of our misgotten billions. You'll see to it?
Certainly, said Aaron stiffly. I'm familiar with my obligations, and quite as sensitive to the problem of public opinion as anyone else in this room. I'll have Mother take care of it right away.
Your mother-in-law is not available at the moment, Aaron, said Thomas. She's sitting in on some kind of folderol with the encoding project this morning. Get one of the other women to do it in her place, or do it yourself.
Aaron opened his mouth to make a remark, and closed it again. He knew what his father-in-law would say if he objected again to the time the women wasted in their silly encoding project. It keeps them busy and contented, Aaron, he'd say. The barren ones and those too old for other work need something harmless to do with their time, Aaron, he'd say. If they weren't involved in their interminable project, they'd be complaining and getting in the way, Aaron. Be glad they are so easily amused. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth, Aaron.
No point in going through all that yet another time.
Furthermore, Thomas was right. Those rare retired women who weren't interested in the project's addle-pated activities were forever underfoot, interfering just because they were bored. He said nothing, and headed quickly out through the side door, up the stairs and into the gardens, where one of his sons was waiting for him to come discuss a problem in translation. He'd been waiting too long, thought Aaron in irritation. At 7, even a male child can't be expected to have unlimited patience. He was halfway down the path to the garden, already at the banks of orange daylilies that the women grew in profusion because not even the most fanatical anti-linguist could consider them an expensive waste. Before he realized that he'd forgotten to send his wife the message after all. God, but women were a nuisance with their unending complaints and their fool illness.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?